And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Some kindergartners in Juneau have been learning the violin and an Alaska Native language at the same time. The instruments they've been learning on are made of cardboard, but they had their first recital last week, backed by older kids playing the real things. The older students are playing real instruments, but the kindergartners play cardboard models. For them, this is a graduation of sorts.
That is a rite of passage to say you're ready to hold the real one, because they will drop it.
Lori Hagee helps lead the Juneau Alaska Music Matters program. She says the violin lessons have been going on for over a decade now, but the Tlingit language part is in its second year.
It's not only a pedagogical tool, but it's a culturally responsive practice to be singing.
She says the program gives teachers an opportunity to make their curriculum more place-based and more reflective of Tlingit culture. Her language teacher, Ku Liek Robbie Littlefield, helps with the lessons over Zoom.
When a teacher needs a help with a phrase or something new or correct their pronunciation, I'm right there and they just turn to the screen and say, Kushik, Ayahakwa, is it like that?
Kukitsi, George Holly, is a teacher and musician and a composer. Hagee asked him to help write the music for the program.
I didn't have to think twice about that. So I became part of that, started to write music to various poems and words of the various elders and Lance Twitchell. And it's been a beautiful thing to see these children absorb it in such an easy and respectful and joyful way.
He also conducts the performance. On command, the kindergartners raise their paper violins to their chins and bow the imaginary strings with paper towel tubes. At the end of each song, they beam up at the applause. Next semester, these paper violinists will be fit for real instruments and start learning to play. They already have a head start on the language. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. The statewide advisory board to the Alaska Marine Highway System voted December 2nd to spend more in 2024. But as Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, labor shortages could hamstring the effort to improve service after years of cost-cutting.
The nearly $160 million approved by the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board would allow all but one of the state's nine ferries to sail during the busy summer tourism season. One vessel would be kept idle to fill in during maintenance layups. The board's unanimous vote comes ahead of the anticipated release of the governor's proposed budget. That'll be a starting point for lawmakers, who will consider the state's overall spending plan when the state legislature convenes next month.
We're talking an entire calendar year away before this would even be in effect.
That's Rob Carpenter, Deputy Commissioner of the state's Department of Transportation. He works closely with the ferry board. The board's 2024 budget recommendation is more costly than the last 5 years. It would be about $14 million more than 2023, but have 27 less service weeks. The operations board was created by the legislature last year to make recommendations to the Marine Highway System. The board has talked extensively over the past several months about the need for improvements.
There are a lot of people, a lot of communities who feel that promises have been made with regard to the Alaska Marine Highway System, that they believe those promises have been broken.
The ferry system is in a very dire, dire straits right now at the moment.
That's board members Captain Keith Hillard and Juanetta Ayers in September. At the board's meeting this month, they considered four operating plans for 2024, each with a different price tag and number of ferries. Plan A would have all nine vessels running. Plan D would be a reduction in service. Plan B and C were in between. Board Chair Shirley Marcourt said she supported Plan B.
And Option B, I think, is really justifiable in terms of going through the legislature.
The state's marine highway system has been suffering from a labor shortage. In February, the state contracted with a job replacement company to help hire new people. Board member Paul Johnson questioned whether the system would have enough staff to crew the 8 vessels in Plan B. Deputy Commissioner Carpenter was optimistic.
We're still aggressively pursuing all the hiring we can. And, I think we have to budget or plan for that. We have full crew and then adjust as necessary when we get there.
The board unanimously supported Plan B for the 2024 operating plan. It's expected to have no service gaps. The recommendation will be sent as a letter to the DOT Commissioner's office. It will also be included in the board's short-range plan. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
A trial is underway in Palmer that could oust David Eastman from his seat in the legislature. The Wasilla Republican is a member of the Oath Keepers. Other members of that group participated in the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. Eastman isn't accused of that. Instead, the trial is the very first test of a 66-year-old disloyalty clause in the state constitution. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
The disloyalty clause says no one can hold office who belongs to an organization that advocates overthrowing the government by force. Attorney Gorian Dedukian represents a Mat-Su voter who claims that Eastman's membership in the Oath Keepers disqualifies him from serving as a legislator.
There are only two elements that we need to prove to win the case. The first element is that Representative Eastman aids or belongs to the Oath Keepers. And the second element is that the Oath Keepers advocates concrete action to overthrow the U.S. government or has actually engaged in such conduct.
In his opening argument, Dedukian said Eastman is a founding lifetime member of the group, has contributed more than $1,000, and even after January 6, took no steps to resign. To judge by the first day of testimony, most of the case is focused on what the Oath Keepers and what exactly they advocated for and did. Dedukian says they combined a dangerous mix of insurrectionist rhetoric and seditious conduct.
On their public website, the organization advocated for a, quote, bloody revolution against the current administration. They said that they were going to, quote, take to arms and fight, and they were going to fight either with or without President Trump's support and whether or not he would call them up as a militia or not. And on January 6th, they did exactly what they said they were going to do.
Eastman's attorney, Joe Miller, chose to delay his opening argument until after the other side presents its case. But in pretrial arguments and in objections, Miller said that the disloyalty disqualification can only apply to conduct that isn't protected by the First Amendment's right to free speech and free association. Some Oath Keepers have been charged with crimes related to January 6. Leader Stuart Rhodes has been convicted of seditious conspiracy. But Miller argues that the charges aren't proof of what the Oath Keepers as an organization advocates for.
The only thing that we know is Stuart Rhodes is the leader. Otherwise, what we have are just a handful of 33 out of 38,000 Oath Keepers that have been charged with crime.
Miller also emphasizes that the plaintiffs have to prove that Oath Keepers provided imminent incitement to acts leading to the overthrow of the government. The first witness in the case was John Lewis, an expert in domestic extremism at George Washington University. Lewis, testifying over Zoom, called the Oath Keepers one of the largest anti-government militias in the United States, and he says they did more than talk.
My opinion is that both before and during January 6, the Oath Keepers called for and attempted to execute a plan that would have resulted in the overthrow of the U.S. government on January 6th.
Eastman easily won re-election last month, but Judge Jack McKenna has put the certification of his election on hold while the case is pending. The uncertainty is one factor complicating the organization of the state House leadership. Eastman sat beside Miller in the courtroom. Dozens of people watched the live stream of the trial. Miller's list of witnesses he'd like to call includes Rhodes and other leaders of the Oath Keepers who are now incarcerated, which Miller acknowledges will make their participation difficult. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And a special weather statement from the National Weather Service here in Juneau. Extreme cold weather temperatures could come this weekend. Arctic air could funnel into the panhandle and temperatures will drop, especially between Sunday and Tuesday. Daytime highs may be as low as single digits and near record temperatures are possible. There's even potential for daytime temperatures to stay below zero. That's early next week. Right now it's 35. You're listening to KTOO.